This evening, we look at some other words and concepts that describe the characteristics of those people among and with whom we live as fellow human beings on this earth. As I said this morning, perhaps if we were giving a report of the kinds of people we live among, we wouldn't want to be too pessimistic and simply point out the problems and the weaknesses among those with whom we have many things to share. And so we might describe ourselves as perhaps occasionally doing wrong, but good-hearted, with good intentions, problems that will be solved in the near future because, quote, we're all working on them. That would be, I suppose, dying men describing dying men. We would not want the full brunt and force of the absolute truth to be brought to our attention because it would be so discouraging and so devastating to us. And yet this is what Paul does, because he describes the generations that will live in the last days, this last dispensation, with language that is very harsh. And yet we know, because Paul is speaking by inspiration, it is the truth. It is harsh in the sense that it reveals so much sin in all of us and the depravity that exists in all of us. And then those who are untempered by law, either God's law or civil law, those who are untempered by and unhampered by even trying to love one another, it really presents a dismal picture of man and what he really is on the inside. We'd looked at the statement disobedient to parents, which really means unwilling to be persuaded. To parents, unyielding, that is, they simply refuse to by any way be persuaded that their parents can have information that will be helpful to them, or that their warnings are legitimate. Most of us have gone through the stage where we felt like our parents were in the world simply for one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to keep us from having any fun or having any friends or having anyone like us. They were there just to be hindrances and to block what we believed would be an exceptionally wonderful life to live. Those of us who've lived over that stage in life realize that it really wasn't true, that the advice they gave was based on truth, it was based on experience, and if we had accepted their advice, it would have saved us a lot of heartache and a lot of pain. He mentions the words unthankful and unkind, that is, people who are ungrateful. They're ungrateful if they have a lot, they're ungrateful if they don't have much. It is simply a characteristic of their life to be ungrateful. Unholy means wicked. Here are ungrateful people who by their character are wicked, who by their nature are wicked, who simply involve themselves in wickedness. It doesn't mean that they're hypocritically wicked. It means that they are openly in rebellion and wicked as a matter of choice, and they're not ashamed of it, not humiliated by it, they're not embarrassed by it. And then Paul mentions without natural affection. One translator has translated this without family affection, without family love. Some indicate that it has in it the idea of mature love. But I think it does mean that families who exist in this last dispensation, there is an absence of genuine love among many families. That is not a modern phenomenon. You know, sometimes we get the idea that mankind has so progressed in his sins until finally we've come to accept all of these modern day sins. But that people hundreds of years ago knew nothing of drunkenness, knew nothing of adultery, knew nothing of abortion, knew nothing of homosexuality, knew nothing of sexual perversion, that these were people who lived sort of animalistic lives and they had never developed to a sophisticated level at least all of these modern day sins. And this is a myth, it's a false conception on our part, because these people, when Paul wrote this epistle, they knew and were sophisticated in their lifestyles and in their sins. And there was at that time an absence of love in the families. I'm not going to say that it's less, and I'm not going to say that it's more, but I am going to say that we do oftentimes see the absence of love among family members. We can call them dysfunctional families. We can call them whatever. But we realize that some way, somehow, because of the absence of love, there is a situation created that is difficult for all the people who are involved in it to bear. Then he mentions truce breakers, and I'd also mentioned this morning, that is, without truth, people who will not make a truce to end hostility. They are angry. They will stay angry. They will die angry. There's absolutely nothing that you can say. There's nothing that can be done. There's no compromise that can be proposed. There's absolutely no halfway point that can be reached. It is an absolute and total opinion, decision, and commitment that they will not be reconciled in any way. And the hostility will not be assuaged, nor will it be lessened. Not only will they not compromise, but their hostility will stay at the same level that they have been able to reach through their depraved nature. And these people are simply intractable. He mentions false accusers, slanderers. This is, of course, what Satan does. Incontinent means without self-control in any area of their lives. They're out of control at work. They're out of control at home. They're out of control when they shop. They're out of control, and I don't mean that they buy more than they should. I mean that any place they happen to be as they go about their lives, they are on the verge of making tremendous mistakes because they simply are not in control. It implies they lose their control because they're so quick to anger. But whatever the reason is, it means that as they live, as they perform, as they do the things that they should be doing, they're just on the verge of what we call losing it. And they can lose it over the smallest, minutest of matters. It may be just a wrong glance in the restaurant. It may be someone got to the parking place first in the parking lot. It may be that someone got the last can off the shelf. Anything could suddenly cause these people to lose control, self-control. And therefore, they are referred to as incontinent. Fierce is the word that's used for uncivilized. It means that these people have never been touched by the things that make up a civilized society. The kindness, the courtesy, the kind of social graces that make life bearable do not exist in their life. They're like pigs at the trough that grunt and push and squeal. They're like savages who have never learned to control any of their appetites. They simply are totally uncivilized. They're uncivilized in dress. They're uncivilized in behavior. They're uncivilized in all of life's activities. Paul mentions also despisers of those that are good. They don't love any person that they believe is a good person. If they want to hate someone, they hate them because they're good. And this brings to my mind some people who publish some of the trash that is on our newsstands today and sometimes comes to us through our newspapers. People who literally cannot abide a good thing. If it's a church that's doing good, they despise it. If it's an individual that's in some way involved in a good work, they despise it. It doesn't make any difference what it is. If it's a good home, they despise it. If it is a good work, they despise it. Anything that is good, they despise it. They refuse to love on purpose and be unfriendly to anything that is holy and righteous and good. Traitors, heady, and high-minded. Traitor here, and we hear that word, we think of someone who's betrayed their country. We think of someone who has sold atom bomb secrets to Russia, or at least we used to think of that. We think of those people in our history who have betrayed our nation. But here it really means one who is willing to abandon another person in time of trouble. When trouble arises, they will abandon you. It doesn't mean they'll go over to the enemy. It just means that they will not stay with anything or anybody through any serious time of trouble. And all of us have been affected by persons of that ilk. And all of us, perhaps at one time or another, have found ourselves to be that kind of person. And we have disliked ourselves when we found ourselves to have been someone who abandoned someone in time of trouble. This traitor, it's the lawyer, it's the Pharisees, who came and saw the man wounded and bleeding and walked by on the other side. If that person, if you knew his name, if you knew where he lived and you were his friend, and yet you saw him wounded and bleeding and you walked around and walked away from and just simply did not want to get involved. Brutal and hostile. But despisers of those that are good and willing to abandon people in a time of trouble. Heady. One who rushes ahead, jumping to conclusions, hasty in speech or action. High-minded. This word high-minded has in it the idea of smoke or cloudy. And therefore, someone whose mind is clouded or someone who has no clear vision, and therefore they become hot-headed and jump to conclusions. Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. Again, you get this concept of loving. You'll notice lovers of their own selves. You'll notice that here people who have no love for other people. And here it is, lovers of pleasure, notice a concept, more than lovers of God, a person. You got two things. You got concepts and you got a personality. And there are people then who love the concept more than the personality. Now when you take that concept to be pleasure or hedonistic activity, which in itself is based upon depravity, that's the things, and you have the personality is Almighty God, then you can see the chasm, the great gulf that exists in this person's mind. Loving, hedonistic pleasure, delight, enjoyment, pleasurable sensations, more than a lover of God. Here's how one translator put it, and prefer good times to worshiping. That kind of hits home to people who seek pleasure, sensuous activity, that just which brings enjoyment. more than those things that belong to God. And right now there's an attempt being made to fix that by making worship a good time and an enjoyable experience. Now, don't misunderstand me. I don't think that true worship is pain. I don't think we have to be in pain in order to worship God. But the idea of making something enjoyable and calling it worship is blasphemy as far as God is concerned. And there are people today who are doing that. They say, well, we've had enough of solemnity, we had enough of reverence, we've had enough of this kind of stuff. And so what do? Okay, take the pews out. Just take the pews out, stack them on the back of the property. Maybe in order to loosen everybody up, we'll just get some roller skates. Okay? Now, I'll still stay here behind the pulpit, but we'll put in some music that you can hear, just good low music, and y'all roller skate, and I'll preach. And you can stop by here and ask me questions, and we'll have interaction, and we'll have dialogue. And in this casual atmosphere, you can have enjoyment and exercise, and I'll have an opportunity to preach God's Word, and we'll all have fun, and that'll be worship. I doubt we can get that casual about our worship to God. I really believe that we're not going to be able to do what we seek to do by taking that kind of attitude. The Bible tells us they have a form of godliness. This is outlined. Sometimes you have the idea of change, but that's not what this is talking about here. It literally means just an outline, a skeleton. And I guess a better word would be make-believe, because that's what it literally means. It's not the real thing. It's just a sketch of the real thing. It's not real religion. It's just a shadow of real religion. It is not real commitment. It is just the outline of commitment. So they have this outline. They say the words. They know the vocabulary. As one man has said, they can talk the talk, but they can't walk the walk. Denying the power of means that they say no to the power that exists in the truth. That is, we're willing to accept the form of religion, but we will say no and have nothing to do with the power of it. That is, we want the form of it, but we don't want it to change us. And we don't want to conform to its regulations and to its teaching. So we'll just take the rough outline, sort of a caricature, sort of a profile. You can actually see the outline and you can say, well, that's Christianity, but anything that it demands of me, any purity that it calls for, any decisions that are right and based upon right principle, no, I refuse all those. I just name the name of Christ and I live in iniquity. And Paul says that's an impossible thing to do. From such, turn away. And again, you almost get to the point of saying, Paul, are you sure? Paul, are you sure you're giving Christian advice? Paul, are you certain that what you're saying is based on Christian principles? Because this is a strong word, and it means to turn oneself away from. Keep away from these people is a strong commandment, is it not? Stay away from these people. Stay out of their presence. Don't mix with them. Don't mingle with them. But these weren't people so far away that they were so isolated that they would never come in contact with them. The implication is that there are people like that in the congregation where Timothy pastors, that they're close and near and he can come in contact with them. And yet Paul says, turn your back on this kind of folk. Walk away from these kind of people. Do not make them your intimate friends. Do not have anything to do with them. But I think more than anything else, it describes the society that you and I work in. It describes the society and the characteristics of the people among whom we labor on jobs and come in contact with at the store and come in contact with wherever we are and whatever we're doing. These are the kind of people you work with. These are the kind of people that you see. These are the kind of people you're in contact with. And it's frightening. And yet Paul says, don't make alliances with them. Don't form friendships with them. Turn away from such people. If we turn away from such people, to whom do we turn? We turn to God. We turn to Christ. If we turn away from those who are wicked, we turn to those who are good. If we turn away from those who will abandon you in a time of trouble, turn to those who won't. If we turn away from those who are unforgiving, turn to people who are forgiving. If you turn from those people who want to hurt you, turn to those people who want to help you. That's the kind of decision that Paul is saying we ought to make living in this society. Don't cast your lot with those people. Turn away from them. But at the same time, turn to another kind of people. Don't turn to the blasphemers and join in with them. Turn to the God they blaspheme.